This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck-Esme, Editor-in-Chief of Feminem. As always, I'm really excited to bring you our next Fix 18 content. This is from Dr. Karen Kuhl. It's called Taking Ownership of the Unwanted Job. Karen is an assistant professor of emergency medicine at Virginia Tech Carilion in Roanoke, Virginia. And she is the first and only director of psychiatric emergency services. And you're soon going to learn why in this talk here. She talks about how sometimes you might find a job that nobody else seems to want to do, make it your own, and really change your whole life and your whole experience of your job by doing something nobody else wants. Enjoy. I am here today to tell you a story. I do want to thank you. It's a real honor to be here. I was pretty nervous about submitting my idea for this talk, and I finally pressed the send button, and I am just so blessed that I got this opportunity. It's been a very nurturing and stressful but nurturing environment, and this group has been wonderful. So I am here to talk a little bit about my story and how I ended up in this place and moving to the South. When you move to the South, you have to remember a few things. You're going to learn to use the word y'all. And I don't care if you're from New York, you will start using the word y'all. You can ask my husband, who's from Minnesota, and my friend from Scotland, y'all. Okay? Secondly, if someone ever says to you, bless your heart, it's bad. It's bad. Okay? And finally, as a woman in the South, you have to learn that you are expected to make a casserole for somebody who's going through a hard time. Now, I do not like to cook, and I'm really sorry, Jen, your cupcakes are gorgeous from yesterday. And Mary, I will probably never use that spinach ball recipe, but if somebody makes them for me, I would use them. For me, making dinner and like planning it out is much more stressful than my trauma shift, and my residents will hear me muttering. I'm like, oh God, I don't know what to do, and I've got to do it before hockey practice. And anyway, so I don't like to cook. But what I've learned is that women in the South make casseroles not only to help another family, but to be a part of their life. In 2008, I did not get sick, and no one in my family died. But we started getting a lot of casseroles, and here is my story. In 2006, my husband and I were living in Portland, Oregon, and we were planning our move back east to get near our family. We were going to Washington, D.C., and then one day we got one of those recruiting postcards in the mail, you know, the one that says you can work like four shifts a month and they're going to pay you $6 million, and I mean, and you're on the beach. Well, that's not what it said. It was a picture of my hometown hospital, and so we decided to take a chance on my hometown of Roanoke, Virginia. Now, Roanoke is gorgeous. It's small, it's in the mountains. You know somebody at Kroger every time you go there. However, despite its size, we have a level one trauma center, we see 90,000 patients a year, and we have a huge homeless population. And to me, it's a lot like my favorite job ever at San Francisco General Hospital. Yeah. Woo, woo, woo. It's actually pretty ironic that I'm here talking to you at this particular conference, because when I joined the group in Roanoke, Virginia, it was 28 men and one woman, and they were cowboys. I mean, cowboys that had Victoria's Secret catalog pictures in the locker room, and literally their wives packed their lunches, handed them to them, and sent them off to work. Now, if you want to be different and make a difference, just be different than they are. And I really was. That first year, I got pregnant with my second child and asked for the first maternity leave in 25 years. They were terrified of me. But, and even pregnant, they followed me around to make sure I wasn't gonna like drop a baby out or something. However, that first year, I also did some other things. I adopted three rescue animals. I started building my dream house with a completely insane architect. My mom ended up on the ventilator in my hospital for 2 weeks. My husband was creating the Virginia Tech Carilion Emergency Medicine PIF, which was every minute of the day, and we were at the time living in my parents' house. My friends and my neighbors saw that we were overwhelmed, and so we got casseroles. And I mean a lot of casseroles, okay? So I soon saw that two physicians, two kids, four pets, a recovering mother, she did great, was just not gonna last. I hired a Rebecca, you know, Rebecca, the one that helps you with your kids and your house and cooking. Thank goodness for our Rebeccas, really. But Rebecca was not even enough, and I finally had to back down to 0.6 FTE. And, you know, for the first time in a long time, I actually could come up for air. I really had more energy for my family, and I had more energy for my patients, and my friends stopped dropping off casseroles, so that was great. However, what you learn in a small town is you know your patients really, really well. You really know your psych patients. You know their names, you know their kids' names, you know their favorite drink, and you know their trigger for going on a bender or, you know, taking their bottle of Seroquel. And I really liked hearing their stories, which is really good because in our ED, we were holding them for hours and days. And what I was seeing is that when they were there, they actually became invisible after they had their medical clearance. Their blood pressures and their glucoses would go up because we would not start their medications. They would go into full alcohol withdrawal because we didn't notice their initial tachycardia. They would go need continuous NEBS and oxygen because we never gave them their inhalers. It was really bad care. Cowboys do great with medical and trauma patients, but they really do not want to hear about the triple sign-out psych patient that wants their Xanax and their Prozac and their nicotine gum. They just don't. And so I sent out some suggestions to the group about maybe we could make some changes, maybe we could do a little bit more. And I didn't hear anything but really crickets. So I decided to do it on my own. I started rounding on the psych patients, and I rounded on them every day that I worked. I would come in before my shift, or I would go see them in between my other patients, and I wrote a full progress note. And, you know, I was often the only doctor that would really talk to them, sometimes for days. And I would start the regular medications. I would sometimes have to hospitalize them for whatever had popped up. And then I actually would call those psychiatrists and say, I just don't think they need the head CT or the pelvic exam or the procalcitonin or the TSH or whatever they're always asking for. And you know, I found that those patients often could move if I just called. So the psychiatrist actually started calling me directly because I was a voice, and we actually developed a relationship between our two groups for the first time in a long time, and we identified some holes that we could fix. So I took that and I built some order sets. So we started on all of our psych patients as soon as they arrived in the ED, and it's their regular medications, it's vital sign parameters that help identify alcohol withdrawal, and it's those contingency medicines, those things like Motrin and Zofran and nicotine patches. And what I learned is that my psych patients are so much nicer when they're not hungover and when their meals come on time. So then I discovered on my days off, I actually got calls at home about complex psych patients. And sometimes it was just easier to go in and deal with the issue than to do it over the phone. So I did. I started rounding on the psych patients on my day off. Now, I did ask them to pay me to do it. And they did. My administration said, that is great. If you want to do that, what you're doing seems to be working, we will pay you. So I would come in for a couple hours a day and start rounding and do notes, and they paid me for them. And it really didn't take much from my family because I would go drop off my kids, I'd go round, and then I'd take my dogs hiking, and it didn't really feel like too much. Brought my hours up to a 0.8 FTE, but it was flexible and it was my time. And then the nurses started calling me the psych whisperer, and they said, Karen, it's very clear that when you work, the patients are more likely to leave. They either get placed or they get discharged. And I said, gosh, I should probably run those numbers. I've never even thought to look at it. So I ran the numbers. And I was able to show that since I started rounding on these psych patients, they were there 50% less time. And since I had started rounding on the psych patients at any particular time, there were few boarders in our emergency department. In fact, it was so impressive to many people that they wrote a book about me. Not really a book, it was just a book chapter, but still it was a book about the Carilion experience and what I was doing at Carilion. And I was really proud of that. But what I was also able to do is I was able to show that as ammunition to my cowboys. I was able to prove my worth. And cowboys love ammunition. And now, my director is not a cowboy. He is wonderful. My chair is not a cowboy. And he identified my worth, and he saw it, and he said, Karen, I am going to give you a full-time position with significant protected time so you can continue to take care of these people. And so with that protected time, I have been able now, I've taken over all of the quality issues for all of psychiatric emergency stuff for our whole system. I've been able to hire nurses and core staff to work with my psych patients. I've been able to actually hire people to help round on nights and weekends. And now I'm finally actually getting to help make policy in my region because I get to meet with law enforcement and the community service boards and our state hospitals. And together, we're actually working together and making a difference. I have a great title, like I said, Director of Psychiatric Emergency Services. Never had that before at Carilion. They kind of made it up and they told me I could say whatever I wanted it to be. But I'm still rounding on some of the same patients I've known for almost 12 years, and I consider them to be some of them my family. Now, there are some things that have changed about my group. We are now cowgirls. We have expanded massively in the last 12 years, and we are now 60% women, okay? It's great. And young and energetic, and there's breast pumps in that same locker room. There are no more Victoria's Secret pictures, and I'm very proud of that. So what is my message here? My message is I took a job that no one else wanted at all, and I owned it. And I admit it's not glamorous at all, it's not fancy, and I get yelled at every single day. But I also get thanked every single day. I get thanked by my patients for sitting with them and actually listening to them. I get thanked by my nurses for going and seeing these patients when they have problems. I get thanked by my psychiatrist because somebody actually answers the phone and talks to them. And I get thanked by my chair because I'm actually making our emergency department more efficient. So it has changed my entire life and my perspective because this is where I dedicate a lot of my time. It is definitely not reproducible, and I know most of you would not want to do it. And when I go to meetings, people literally say, Karen, you take care of the psych patients? Bless your heart. But I now have time to go to my kids' lacrosse games. I have time to manage their hockey teams. I'm even learning how to play hockey. I have time to support my husband, who's a program director, and his 36 resident children. And I still work clinically, which I absolutely adore, and I want to do it for the rest of my life, honestly. I love going to work every day. But all of my extra energy gets to go to this group that is just already so marginalized. So what I want to do today is I just want to say, you know, you guys have so many talents. So look around your emergency department, because there are jobs there that somebody might actually pay you for. And again, you have to be in the right group, but you just never know. Maybe your ED needs to be more geriatrics friendly. Maybe you can actually develop more palliative care in your ED, like Ashley just talked about. Maybe you have a lot of frequent flyers that, you know, use a lot of your resources and you can work with case management to actually make a difference in their care. Or maybe you just have a lot of people boarding and you need to work with your hospitalists and your surgeons to do right by them while you're in your emergency department and get them upstairs. I have been very blessed with my job because I've been able to find the passion in what I do outside of my just clinical duties. And I've now been in attending 17 years and I could do it forevermore. I really am very happy because I feel like it's important. I've dedicated such my extra energy to something that needs it. I still don't like to cook, and it is a long-standing joke with my friends that I will definitely not make you a casserole if you get sick. But I do take care of these people I consider to be my community, and they are my Clarences and my Bryans and my Michelles and my Kims that I've taken care of for 12 years, and they are my community, and I make them my version of a casserole every single day. Thank you very much.